Recorded live from Space Coast Podcast Studios in Melbourne, Florida, this is The Cannabis Report with Michael Patterson, brought to you by MGMC Pharma Group, where we make a difference. Check out the virtual tour of our cannabis cultivation facility on our website, mgmc-group.com. Now here's your host, Michael Patterson!
Woo-hoo! How's everybody doing today? Definitely excited to be here in sunny Florida. It's about 80 degrees. I don't know what that is in Celsius, but it's pretty nice here in the wintertime. Today's show, we're going to have an amazing guy on Down Under, but not that Down Under. It's the cousin, I guess you'd say, of Australia and New Zealand. Very big rugby powerhouse. And also Kiwi. A cannabis powerhouse. Yes, that's our producer, Mark Patterson, butting in there. Listening to my beginning. Hello there, Mark. How are you?
Oh, hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm good doing to see lovely. You. I'm doing lovely.
You look great, Mike, by the way.
Really? Sort of and you look great in your rugby jersey, which you didn't have an All Blacks jersey. If you're unfamiliar, that's the national jersey of New Zealand. So Mark claims to be a great rugby guy, but yet doesn't have a New Zealand jersey.
I am, and you know what? You're absolutely right, Mike. I do not have an All Blacks jersey. However, I did see them live against the United States a couple years ago in Chicago at Soldier Field, where they beat us 75-5.
Right.
So I am an All Blacks fan, but USA first.
Yeah, I get it. I'm right there. And then Mark's all about the rugby stuff. And our show is mainly about cannabis, but we like to talk a little bit about rugby, too. And Brenton Weber, on our guest on today, he's going to give us a little bit about the public view and perception of medical and recreational cannabis down there. If you're unfamiliar, New Zealand just went through a recreational cannabis ballot initiative, which barely did not pass. It almost passed. And also, Brenton is involved in the transformational economy. He's going to explain how that works and how we deal with that in the cannabis space, and some ideas for future entrepreneurs in the cannabis space. But before that, we want to get to the news. So, Mark, take us away with the news.
It's time for Cannabis News.
Cannabis News brought to you by MRX Extractors. MRX Extractors are built on years of research and system validation to provide reliable processing. Our ASME certified machines adhere to the highest standards of quality in the world for pressure vessels. For more information and to see our amazing line of machines, go to mrxextractors.com. That's mrxextractors.com. Mike, this is the NEWS. So we're heading off to New Jersey. A legal weed debate continues. Senator Geraldine Cardinale, a Republican, is the primary sponsor of Bill 3407. This bill legalized possession of six or fewer marijuana plants once New Jersey signs a legalization bill into law. The people of New Jersey made it clear in November that they want to lift the prohibition on cannabis, Cardinale said in a statement. Since then, the legislature has spent 3 months fumbling around with what should have been a simple task and complicated the legalization effort with countless fees, licensing, and extra layers of bureaucracy. The strained medical cannabis program in New Jersey has led to high prices and product shortages, and those who want to grow their own medicine see it as a workaround for the program's hurdles. But Democratic lawmakers, while pursuing legislation, have said they do not want to allow home grow just yet. Cardinale's bill would affect not just medical patients, but also growing for personal use. Currently, the growing five plants or less can result in a 3 to 5 year prison sentence and a $25,000 fine. So, Mike, break it down for us. Republicans say they want to grow, and ironically, Democrats say they don't. So what's going on in New Jersey?
Well, you're getting a lot of... As the classic line is, legislation is messy when it's being written. So there's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes. We've been helping with advising, I wouldn't call it lobbying, with different groups across the United States, depending on the state. We are very active in Oklahoma. We have connections into New Jersey and what's going on there. And a lot of it depends specifically on home grow is police hate home grow. And the reason they hate home grow is because nobody knows if it's legally grown or if it's going to go to the black market. So it can't, it's not being able to be into the regular system, because if somebody's growing five or six plants and they're doing three or four harvests a year and selling to their buddies and not using it themselves, or police come into a home and there's a bunch of marijuana there, they don't know if it's home grow, if it's legal, it's illegal. If they get pulled over by a policeman, the policeman doesn't know if it's legal or illegal. So that's why one of the challenges is with home grow. You know, people are against it for the public safety aspect. I have no issue with it. I think if companies can, in marijuana companies and cannabis companies who have licenses, can use this, they can use it to bring in people. Because one of the things people don't realize on home grow is not easy. Okay, so people who think you can just throw seeds in the ground and start growing weed, you can try to do that, but growers who know realize it's a lot more complicated than that. So a lot of people who end up starting with home grow end up moving back to the stores if it's an illegal market, because that way they can get the product. It's a higher quality. It may cost a little bit more, but it's consistent and they know they can get a hold of it.
So when they, so they've legalized recreational cannabis, but they haven't legalized homegrown. And so basically what it seems like, they're kind of figuring out the rules of the, since the law passed, right. Now they're going to have to fill the legislation for it. So,
right. So anyway, anytime you go through this, you have a constitutional amendment, which they had. So that is the amendment. Now you have to write the law and how that's going to be broken down. And so that's what they're having trouble to do. This is what you typically hear when you start having challenges, is that how is that law going to be written and who's going to benefit the most? And a lot of times, you know, when you're up there writing legislation, it just depends on who the slant is on who's going to benefit. And I think this is one of those situations. It's going to take its toll on the other states around there, because whatever New Jersey does, other states need to follow. So if they only have home grow in New Jersey, that could create challenges for the state of New York, because then people drive into New Jersey, they get a bunch of home grow, it doesn't go through the tax system, and we don't get the tax revenue. And the whole goal of doing this is to help society and help each other increase revenues at the state level. So you want to have people within the system.
Well, cannabis in New Jersey and cannabis comparing to opioids, a 30% drop in opioid deaths when you have cannabis dispensaries in town. A latest study published in the British Medical Journal shows a 17% reduction in opioid deaths between 2014 and 2018 with regions with just one cannabis dispensary. You add a second one and it goes to a 21% decrease. And you add a third dispensary and you get to 30% reduction in opioid deaths. Researchers at Yale and UC Davis based the results on data from 812 counties in 23 states with medical or cannabis dispensaries since 2017, combined with the state and county level data on opioid deaths. The more dispensaries a county had, the fewer opioid deaths they suffered, research found. So another study, Mike, showing the benefit of using cannabis as opposed to opioids.
And this is something that we continue to see. And so I would encourage you who know this study and can look at this study, use it in your fight to make this legal in your country or your state, and fight this misinformation that we have, not just in the United States, but we have it all over the world in regards to cannabis. This is very powerful news, because we all pretty much knew this. But what we're seeing is it's actually coming into objective data, and we can use that data to our advantage, because cannabis does help human society move forward. Opiates, we do not have technical opiate receptors in our body. We have cannabinoid receptors through the endocannabinoid system. And so cannabis is accepted into our body through our DNA. Our DNA is predisposed to accept it as a medicine. So that's one of the reasons that cannabis is working so well. And so I see this trend continuing to where cannabis will continue to be increased for medicine, and then opiates will decrease.
Moving out west to Boise, Idaho, a proposed constitutional amendment that would prevent the legalization of marijuana in Idaho moved forward Friday as lawmakers in the conservative state try to halt the increasing acceptance of the drug nationwide. The Senate Affairs Committee voted to send the joint resolution that bans all psychoactive drugs not already legal in Idaho to the full Senate. Oregon, Washington, Montana, and Nevada have legalized recreational and medicinal marijuana, while Utah allows medical marijuana. Backers said the Idaho Constitution needs to be changed because neighboring states heavily influenced by out-of-state money have approved marijuana use through voter initiatives, and it could happen in Idaho. When drugs are legalized that are currently illegal, it increases healthcare costs and crime, said the resolution sponsor, Republican Senator Scott Groh, condemning both recreational and medical marijuana use. This is about money. It's not about caring for people who might have pain or sickness. Now, some lawmakers question whether the constitutional amendment could interfere with the legalization of industrial hemp, a potentially lucrative crop for farmers who have seen attempts to legalize the crop fail in current and recent years. Opponents also question whether the amendment would ban CBD oil containing small amounts of THC. Both products are illegal in Idaho, but are legally federally as well as in most states. 36 states and the D.C., Guam, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands have approved comprehensive, publicly available medical marijuana programs, according to the National Conference of State Legislatures. 15 states and 3 territories legalized recreational marijuana. And Mike, it looks that the government of Idaho wants to outlaw and ban. So they're going the totally opposite direction.
Yeah, they just don't want to get on the train, and I get it. I mean, this is not about making money in Idaho. This is about fear and control. So something that we found going into state legislatures is they just don't like people telling them what to do. It doesn't matter what state. When you do constitutional amendments, you go around the legislature, they get really pissy. So they're like, well, this is our job and we make the rules. And what are you doing? You're taking the power out of their hands. I think this is a power play by the legislature, because if you look at Idaho, they're totally surrounded. Every single state is moving recreational. So they're at a point where they can't keep it out. So they're trying to find different ways to do this. And I think at the end of the day, when the U.S. does go legal, they're going to have to get in line eventually. However, even under hemp, they still have not recognized hemp until recently that hemp was actually legal, even though it was passed as federally legal in 2018. So Idaho wants to do what Idaho wants to do. But at the end of the day, they're going to have to deal with this because they're not going to have a choice. And putting your head in the sand, like most states have tried to do over time, the people eventually rise up. And that's what's happened in all the states around Idaho. So they're going to have to eventually get on board, because then they're going to start to see the dollar signs and the industry that can come there through R&D and other areas that we already know are coming on the East Coast. So I think eventually, to increase their economy, they're going to take a different look moving forward.
Well, they're just going to be left behind in the right. Green tsunami that's coming. And right. Hey, that's fine. You know, you have the early adopters, you have most of the people in this space, and then you have the laggards. And Idaho looks like they're going to be the laggards. Right. All right, we move internationally for our last story today to Thailand. They are ready to expand their cannabis production. The Thailand Department of Medical Sciences is testing and developing health products from cannabis and hemp, said Supakit Sirilaki, the department's director. In August last year, a local laboratory testing active substances in cannabis plants, extracts, and oil became the first lab in Thailand to be granted international standard certification. Now the testing technique has been passed on to the medical science centers nationwide for the analysis of vital substances and residues, and now they can develop laboratories outside the department's jurisdiction. This will assure the quality and safety of cannabis products. So, Mike, I wasn't even sure. I didn't even know that Thailand was legal.
Yes, Thailand is legal. They're the first country in Asia to really step out and say, hey, we're going to do this. Originally, they only had it for domestic ownership. And so now they're starting to consider to bring in international ownership. Certifications you're talking about are very important. To sell cannabis on the open markets internationally, you typically need European Union Good Manufacturing Practices certification, or you need EU Good Agricultural Practices, or some people say GACP. Those take a very long time to get unless you go through a company who already has that certification, and then they start doing cannabis in that country. But Thailand is trying to take the lead. I think they're going to have baby steps as we move along. There's still barely a domestic market there. We haven't seen any exports out of Thailand yet because it is so new, and due to COVID, they've had some challenges. But I think they could be a major player in Asia as they move forward. And I think Asia, if you're not familiar, they're a little bit more conservative in some cases, very Christian-based area in some of these countries, South Korea, Thailand, and others. And so they typically a little bit slow on the uptake when it comes to cannabis being legal, but they are making strides, and Thailand is the most progressive country in Asia with cannabis. And so we definitely hope to see them move forward.
Well, and that's it for the news, Mike, for today. Back to you, buddy.
All right. So now we're going to get into meeting our great guests from the bottom of the planet, New Zealand. So, Mark, go ahead and take it away.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, our guest today has one of the most popular podcasts in New Zealand named Halftime Orange. It's available on Apple Podcasts. This 179-centimeter, 80 kg customer experience titan hails from Blackpool in the northwest of England, mate, but currently lives in Auckland, New Zealand, where in his spare time, he loves watching black and white movies with his favorite actor, Jimmy Stewart. Well, it's a wonderful life here when you get to speak to this guy. Let's give a warm Cannabis Report welcome to Brenton Weber.
Brenton, welcome to the show, big man.
Thank you so much, and especially for that amazing introduction, Mark.
You're very welcome, Mike.
May have slightly overcooked the popularity of our podcast here in New Zealand.
That's okay.
I'm hyping you up, bro.
That's right.
We tell companies that you should always write your PR release ahead of start doing all the projects. You're basically producing my future PR for me. We will become the most popular podcast in New Zealand now that you've made it
all
a
right.
reality.
That's awesome. So, Brent, tell us a little bit about what you guys do and explain to the viewers and the listeners about the transformational economy, and then we'll get into the cannabis side about that in New Zealand.
Yeah, sure. Well, again, thanks for having me on your show. Really great to be here. I'm down here at couldn't really get much further away, I don't think. But it's beautiful summer here. I'm a customer experience consultant, and I've been running my own consultancy for the last 3 years. Up until COVID, you know, our mission was to help companies make the most of what had become known as the experience economy, where businesses are judged on the feelings that they produce. This all stems from a book called The Experience Economy. That's kind of like this canon, this fundamental canon of customer experience consultancy. So everybody's read this book, and I think it was written originally in 1998. And it predicted, it was having a look at the evolution of business. And it says, you know, for most of human history, we've had a commodities-based economy, where it's about how much you can get hold of, supply and demand. Mm-hmm. Then in the late 70s, 80s, 90s, we got well into the brand economy, where companies were differentiating their goods by who made it. So that's when you and I cared about whether we were wearing Nike or Adidas t-shirts, or the German car marks started to really come out. And I think you guys were probably way ahead on the branding.
Yeah.
So probably before it got to my world back in the UK in the 80s. In the 90s, we then moved into the service economy, where it was about building relationships on the continued service. So, for instance, car companies started to realize that it was the service departments that actually sold the cars.
Yeah.
The first car was the branding. Then every subsequent loyal purchase became service focused.
Okay.
And that started to percolate through business. And then in the late 2000s, we started to see the dawn of the experience economy, where we start to attach our loyalty and advocacy to companies that make us feel better. Because it is weird, we still kind of live in a world where there's a lot of people who exchange their most precious resource, like time and money, whether they're employees or their customers. They really should be coming away feeling a little bit better about life after that exchange of value. And so that's where companies now have been differentiating themselves. You know, in a homogenized world where really the only difference was how we were being treated and how how company-centric those companies were. So that's what I was doing up until COVID, trying to help companies realize that they were going to make the most money from embracing the experience economy. Well, the last year has seen an evolution in the way that we do business, in the way that we communicate. Everybody now is a digital native. Yeah. Like even grandma is shopping online.
Right.
Businesses have had to move forward in their evolution to embrace virtual teams, remote learning, which isn't a, remote working and remote learning, which isn't a new concept. I mean, we were talking about this when I was at the Financial Times in the early 2000s, that this was going to be a big savior of climate change, that we could get better work-life balance by not having a two-hour commute in the mornings and the evenings. So businesses have had to move forward 5 years, but we've also, as consumers, we have become much more outcome focused.
Yeah.
I mean, the status quo has been ripped out from under the feet of most people in some ways. We have had to embrace new ways of communicating with people. I mean, we've got a new verb in the international lexicon. We now Zoom with each other.
Right. You know, right, exactly.
Goodness knows how Skype missed that, because we're really, that's what the verb should have been.
Right.
Considering their position where they were.
Mm-hmm.
But Zoom actually have a better customer experience because it's quicker to get online. I've found.
Right. I agree.
I've got some legacy experience with Skype, and it's kind of meant that when the new opportunity came, which by a company that seemed to understand what I was trying to get to quicker, I became their advocate. And they've now, because it's been such a transformational and outcome-focused part of our new world, it now becomes part of our language.
It makes a lot
of
sense.
And that's the transformation. You know, we now communicate easily. I don't know about you, but I mean, I'm really honored to be on your show.
Well,
and if you'd have told me 2 years ago that I could have been having these international conversations so easily.
Right.
I think my mindset was, it was still those traditional borders. Whereas this year, this last year, it's just as easy to talk to you once we deal with the time zones as it is to speak to my IT consultant who lives three streets away when we're in lockdown. So we've all become more transformational. We've all been having to solve more problems. And so we're noticing when companies help us transform our lives, help solve our problems, deliver outcomes consistently.
So let me ask you that. So with that, what we're seeing in the cannabis side, and we'll get into New Zealand in just a second, but what I see happening, and you tell me how this fits into a transformational economy, is that in what I see happening globally in cannabis is you're going to start to see companies who can't, what I say is you just can't be pigs anymore. You just can't go make money and have returns for your stockholders or your investors. Yes, that's important. But you have to do something bigger, because those companies, for example, there's companies that you buy socks and they give one to you and you get one for free. You know, or you're doing something bigger than just providing a service. Maybe you're providing medication for free for people who can't have it if you're selling medication. So where does that whole the consumer want something more than just a product? How does that all fit into the transformational economy?
Well, consumers will still, commodity is still important. Branding is still important. The service is still important. It's just that that's now become almost a base expectation of people.
Okay.
And we build our expectations up not just from our own industry or the company that we're working with. We build it up from every customer experience that we're now having with similar products or similar industries. Or even we get our, we could be any digital experience now is kind of judged in our internal neuroscience based on our best digital experience anywhere else. It could be a completely unrelated industry, an unrelated product, but that becomes another part of our aspect. So as companies start to realize that the only reason why we move away from the transactional now is if it, one, delivers a great experience, and that's still an area where there's a lot of room for growth with any commodity or brand centric company, but also the real growth and loyalty, which is where the money comes. You know, you'd rather be, let me take a step back. I do think that as business in general is in, has become addicted to the tap. And if we think of a company as a bath, and all the sales strategies that we've got is to get more water into that bath.
Yeah.
And yet no one really talks very much about the plug of that bath, the retention strategy, which I would say is probably more important.
Yeah.
Because you don't need a lot of this water to be in your bath to grow, because the water is kind of magical. It attracts more water just over the sides. It says, hey, more water, come here. We're having a great time in this bath. Like if we look at models of companies that have had 15% increases in their retention compared to their competitors who are selling the same product at the same price in a homogenized market, they grow over 5 years 308% more than the company who had a slightly lower retention rate. So this, just from a business perspective, like I've got two sides to this. One, I think we should be treating each other a lot better. Yeah. I think if I give you money for anything, I should come away feeling a bit better for it. So that's now a base level, the experience side of things. But if I'm going to become a real advocate for a brand, if I'm going to put my own dopamine on the line by giving a recommendation to somebody and saying this is going to be life-changing for you, then it better damn well be
better live up to expectations, right?
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
I think
I'm only going to do that if I felt the change myself. Right. Like we've got all across business this weird reliance on this NPS score, which is this, you know, on a scale of 0 to 10, how likely are you to recommend our service or product?
Yeah.
It's usually done at the transaction, which is most important to the company, instead of the moment of usage when you've bought the product and you see whether or not it's actually going to deliver on the reason why you're in that relationship.
Will it deliver? And I think that is a big thing with cannabis, because cannabis is very new in New Zealand. You guys have medical there right now, but it's extremely small. It just got started up. And so when you talk about the customer...
The industry is getting pretty big.
Yeah.
The industry is getting pretty big. Like our export market, our export figures are really good.
Well, for medical cannabis, they're not, but other stuff it is. But the point is that, but the thing is,
for our small growing industry,
yes,
we're pretty
for your small bad. Growing industry. So to give you an idea, New Zealand has what, 4 million people? Is that right?
Just under 5.
Okay, 5 million. Yeah. Thank you. So we'll just say 5 million.
Right.
So the challenge is New Zealand legalized medical, and then they had a vote this year, late last year in October, to legalize recreational cannabis. My thought is, and Brenton, if you can kind of give us your transformational economy thought process on the customer. But what I see here from somebody from the States is, at the first vote, you really hadn't gotten the medical system up and running to where a lot of people can have an experience to understand what this is. And so that's why I think it barely did not pass. I think you needed 50.1% and it had like 48.9%, very close. But from an outsider's point of view, it seems like there just wasn't enough knowledge and understanding and comfort level in making this legal. And I wanted to kind of see what you thought and the vibe in New Zealand was around that whole vote.
Well, it's funny, I can apply my universal customer journey to the New Zealand voter.
Okay.
Because we, before we get on any journey of transformation, we start assessing. We're in this constant state of assessment where we're taking in all the information from what we're being told, what we're reading, what we're seeing in the media, what we're not seeing in the media. You know, knowledge is power.
Right.
And so a lack of knowledge is power to the other side as well.
Right.
For us to even get to a point where we're going to activate and say, yeah, okay, I'm on this journey, you have to go through assess, you have to go through admit, which is where you actually start getting involved. The assessment is kind of happening without, that's the kind of just, it's just reacting to the outside world. Then you start admitting that you want to know a little bit more about it. And then you affirm based on all the information that you've got previously through the assessment phase, through the admitting that you may well admit, like there was a lot of conversation taking place before the referendum. One thing that it really did was it brought the conversation into normal life.
There you go.
It was being discussed.
Yep.
Between parents and kids, with in-laws, mm-hmm. at business meetings, at networking events. This went from being a subject matter that was just never discussed.
Right.
Even though we had to little old New Zealand, a thriving and exciting medical cannabis industry. With people like Medican and Zican.
Yeah, I like what these guys are doing, and we want to see that, because I'm very bullish on New Zealand, because you guys still have low cost of production, you have a high educated workforce, and you have the ability to dominate if we can make sure that your cost of production stays somewhat low. But I think what your expertise is in your knowledge base there, because talking to the people down there, I think is great. But what you make a very good point is, because you're finally bringing cannabis into the mainstream by having the conversation. So to think that they're going to move from just talking to it to go ahead and voting for it that quickly is very difficult. And so what we've seen in other states and countries, it takes a couple times to go legal. While you guys are voting, the country of Germany was actually voting to legalize recreational cannabis. Actually, excuse me, they were trying to go through the legislative session to actually pass it. It did not pass. We didn't expect it to pass, but it's kind of like what you're saying is the transformational economy is saying people don't know enough about this yet to have to understand how it's going to affect them. And you're saying the lack of knowledge is the same as a powerful element as the having knowledge. And I think
I'd say that the no vote, they almost played a negative transformation game.
Of course.
And they were basically highlighting all of the bad things that were going to happen to this country.
Right.
Think of it as it was an ad campaign. They had more money behind it. Yeah. It seemed there were these ads that were going up called everyone will remember Dope Dairies.
Dope.
Now, our dairy is a corner shop. It's where kids get lollies from.
Okay.
It's where they used to be able to sell synthetic cannabis, which was a terrible scourge of New Zealand for a while. We had a lot of deaths from synthetic cannabis, especially around Auckland. And this was because there was no legislation around it,
right.
And it was a brand new thing. Dairy owners were able to sell this to supposedly over 16s or whatever, but because there was no legislation, it kind of created this bad situation that had to be dealt with. So they dealt with it. But the No campaign was showing these dairies with cannabis plant signs all over it and kids skating out in front. And yet we had the suggested post-prohibition method of distribution was going to be the tightest of anything that we have. There would be specific dispensaries.
Right.
It would be 3 years older than the alcohol limit.
Right.
Like the way that they were allowed to just create fear and like this is how it's going to transform your neighborhood and transform your kids' future.
The sky's
going to
fall. The world's going to end. It's the thing is, it's literally I've seen this. It's Groundhog Day for me, because this is what I see in every country. But what happens is, so this is why when people ask me, is it going to pass in New Zealand? And I'd say no. Basically, for what you're reiterating is to say there's not enough knowledge on a street to street level. Like my uncle or my grandmother had medical cannabis and they didn't have all those problems. So they don't have the information enough to realize that the fear is not real. And this is what we've seen in the States, to where once the people see it's not as big of a deal, then pretty much every time it passes, and that's where it has to take two or three times. But we see this happening. I mean, you know, the U.S. right now, we're 35 states is legal. I think that as the U.S. moves forward, I see New Zealand kind of falling in line, because what I see, and you tell me what you see from a New Zealander, whatever the U.S. goes along with, I see Australia and New Zealand kind of toeing that line, just in general. Would you find the same thing with policy and rules?
Well, I think that there is some there's a lot of politicking associated with it.
No.
We have but not with lobby groups or anything like that, although I'm sure that's involved. But in New Zealand, we have this weird situation where we have 3-year voting processes.
Okay.
So every 3 years, there's an election.
Okay.
And everybody knows it's an issue because you basically have a year of celebrating that you're in power and starting up. You have a year of doing shit, and then you have a year of
trying to get reelected.
Campaign.
right, exactly.
And middle New Zealand, I mean, our Labour government, it's the first time that anybody has got a majority of this size under our MMP, which is kind of a proportional representation system. So usually it's always a coalition. Now, it seemed that, I mean, Labour got, they were spanking National because of their COVID response. You know, we've been classed, just I saw last week, the Lowry Institute have put New Zealand up at like 96.4 out of 100 when they look at all the different ways of
Yeah, you guys, are, let me tell you, your Prime Minister, everybody knows her now.
So they got voted for by middle New Zealand.
Okay.
For the first time, like the centre just went, yeah, we got to say thank you. These guys have basically provided us with, you know, I don't even want to talk about it. Like I've got relatives in the UK who are really suffering, and yet here we are after being led. You know, it always starts with leadership.
Right.
It starts and ends with leadership, and we were led through it, and we're now in a place where we can come and go without masks on, like we should be. We should be hand sanitizing. But, you know, the leadership has meant that they were going to get in anyway. But it seemed that they wouldn't put their neck out in any way to show leadership around this topic. And it was a fear of losing the votes. It was, it was like you could see it when COVID was happening, the opposition was kind of imploding a little bit. And you could kind of imagine behind the scenes, Jacinda would just be like, guys, just don't say anything. We don't need to put our necks out here. We've got this one in the bag, and it's just going to keep growing. So just don't say anything and let them keep. And so I just thought, like, I'm not critical on Jacinda on many issues, but political leadership was an incredibly important part of this close vote. It would have taken, she came out the day the election, the referendum results were announced to say how she voted. But she wouldn't say it prior.
Got it.
And it was like, well, who cares now? Now it's just like what you would have voted, but your vote could have actually
made a difference.
Led some of those people who were sitting on the fence. And it was those people. You're always going to get the people who think you know, the Luddites that don't want progression.
Right.
But the issue was the people in the middle who could have gone either way. If they'd have been introduced to the transformational aspect of a yes vote. Mm-hmm. We didn't talk about the benefit. All we talked about was the benefit to tax.
Yeah.
Like, this is how many dollars we're going to get from it.
Right.
Well, you don't necessarily spend your dollars that well anyway. So what does that mean to the transformation of our world when we're being told that everything's bad?
Right.
Like, what's going to happen to agriculture? Like our agricultural industry, which is our lifeblood in New Zealand. You know, the white gold is our milk.
Oh, export. I was going to say. So that's a different type of
white gold. Yeah. No, not Colombian white gold. Right. but New Zealand white gold is milk, milk powder. Like it's a massive proportion of our economy. But that's always going to be great if we can make our strongest part of the economy better.
Right.
But that part of the economy also is terrible for our water because of its focus on cattle.
Yeah.
Like the green dollar that we could have got, the transformative nature that it would have had on our waterways, on our farming communities, on our economy in general, on employment, on health,
right,
on justice. All of these things were being discussed in the private domain, but I never saw much of this being talked about by politicians or the yes vote. It was just, why isn't this going to be bad for us? Not how good could this be for us? The other reason why the middle voter, the centrist voter, could have easily have just gone the wrong way is because of one specific aspect of the system that all of this works within, and that is the New Zealand Medical Association.
Mm, yes.
And they couldn't even be bothered. The chairwoman of the New Zealand Medical Association, who I honestly believe, I cannot believe she's even been allowed to keep her position. She based her advice on probably the only documentary that was in New Zealand, which was a bit of infotainment, really. It wasn't, you know, hard-hitting documentary evidence, but they interviewed her and she said, we would vote against this. We think that this will be bad for the health system, for the criminal justice system. Mm-hmm. So if we, so this is the way that we're voting.
Well,
that was based on 2012.
Oh my gosh.
Research.
Yeah.
Where there had been no legalization in any area of significance.
Right.
Certainly not enough to get any, you know, like the opioid news
story
that you
right.
shared mm-hmm. earlier on today. Like, these are the things that people need to hear about. Right. And that's up to the yes vote to be a little bit more transformational in their thinking mm-hmm. and a bit more ambitious and look at the whole system, because the legalization of cannabis in New Zealand would have been transformational for this country.
Well, what I'm hearing you say,
we weren't voting on whether to introduce cannabis to New Zealand. I mean, it grows here by the roadside. It's not as if somebody couldn't just go out and sprinkle some seeds anywhere and pretty much get a crop. So this is basically voting on where we've voted to keep prohibition, to create more criminal justice issues,
right.
to not look at this as a health issue. And about a week before our referendum, about 20 doctors came out and said, look, we think this is disgraceful. This is not based on any modern research. This does not look at what the health benefits will be for the country. We vehemently disagree with our association. And there's actually a court case taking place at the moment with 350 individuals that have challenged the misinformation so that we can have the referendum cancelled.
Well, with that, it's interesting. So what I'm hearing you say, and for people listening, is when you're looking to legalize in a certain country, listen to what Bretton's saying about the transformational economy, the human experience and understanding. It's all about showing them your position. And so that is the thing I would ask for you guys to take away from this is what he's saying is the approach to what they have was to generate money for the economy, but they really didn't hit all the social and psychological aspects of this. And that was, to me, one of the down, what you're saying, Brent, is one of those downfalls. But that is why Britain's approach is something to consider in the cannabis space, because remember, cannabis is moving mainstream. And in order to move mainstream, you have to have mainstream style thinking. It's not going to be a closet industry like people are used to in a certain state or a certain region. It's global. New Zealand will become a powerhouse over time, supplying some of the world's markets, specifically, I feel, Asia and the United States, because when the United States goes legal, right now we have 90% of all legal sales in America, and the demand is going to skyrocket, and we're going to need support from all countries around the world. So this has been great, Britton. Britton from New Zealand, down under, with...
By the way, can I just say I'm a POM living in New Zealand.
What's a POM?
What does that mean?
I'm basically, as you said, I was born in England, and
right.
I lived most of my life there. And we talked about rugby before. I'm not quite there to become a 100% All Black fan yet. I'm like you, Mark. I support them.
Right.
But when it comes to England versus New Zealand,
right.
As soon as a Kiwi gets a ball, I just want someone to break him in half.
Right.
Brenton,
to the Rose, baby.
Well, you'll like this. Rose. So I went to the England-Wales Six Nations game in March 2020, right before the world shut down at I forgot whether it was like the world's, it was like the Super Bowl of rugby, and I was just honored to be there. And then one of the guys that Mark talked about was doing a show beforehand. It was like a meet and greet, and through this, it was kind of like we had box seats, if Americans are listening, and I was just in awe. It was like I was just so honored to be there, and your boys, England, did beat Wales for a phenomenal game that I'll always remember.
Oh, was it at Twickenham?
It was at Twickenham. I took pictures and everything. And
I have to say, that is a transfer, in my opinion, what they've done with that ground. And I've been, you know, I haven't been there in the last 14 years while I've been in New Zealand. but to see it change over time. They have transformed the viewing experience. Yeah. Like, there is nowhere in that stadium where you haven't got a great seat. Obviously, there are some.
I was there in 2018, and same thing. It's fantastic, and it's very. It resembles a lot of the American stadiums, where you know it's just as best. You know, there's no bad seat in the house. Now, since we do have someone from New Zealand, I do want to, for the New Zealanders that are listening, rugby related. Major League Rugby started in the United States, and it's starting to kind of take hold. We do have a decent television audience. ESPN they cover the games. Maa Nonu is playing for the San Diego Legion. You know, so he's he's coming over there. So the U.S. is starting.
He is a scary man. He is a scary.
I know. I was amazed.
I've got a Maa Nonu story for you.
Yeah, tell me.
Here in Auckland, and I was walking to work one morning, and it was the week before a big All Blacks game. Right. And whenever the All Blacks were playing in Auckland, they'd pretty much stay at the Heritage Hotel, and I walked past there on the way to work. And so off comes, I'm walking along the bus, and Maa Nonu steps off the bus.
Really?
He's holding a baby. I think maybe 6 months in. And I think I know him. It's that unconscious moment where it's a face that you recognize.
It's kind of like knowing Tom Brady. You know, you don't know him, but you know him, right?
Yeah. So I smiled and gave him this big grin. And honestly, he gave me that Maa Nonu on the ground, like, what the hell are you looking at? Sort of thing. I was so pleased he was holding a baby. But I did, you know, there's a little tightening for a moment. Right. But yeah, and without doubt, in my opinion, one of the best impact players in the world.
You know, and that's the thing, is he's playing in the U.S. I do want to ask this question. So, you know, the USA has become a powerhouse in sevens. And, you know, the Olympics is coming up in Japan, and as long as, you know, everybody's saying we're going to have it. So is there any conversation about, you know, New Zealand, they won the bronze medal in the first Olympic in 2016 for sevens. So is there any talk, I mean, about them pushing to, you know, they wanted to win the gold medal? Is that a huge accomplishment in the land of the All Blacks, or is it more of the World Cups?
It's weird. We only really hear about them when they're doing well.
Really?
I just want to say, I'm glad I'm not a dyed-in-the-wool All Blacks fan. There's a lot of English people that come over here, and as soon as they get off the plane, it's like, I'm an All Blacks fan now, because they are so amazing, and I won't be one of those. but they're not used to losing in rugby. Like, they, no one ever beats them because they played well. Everyone beats them because they lost that day. It was their performance. It was them letting everybody down, you know. And so it's funny. I remember hearing a lot about the sevens on national TV when, you know, they were at the top of the heap. Very little now.
Everybody's catching up.
It's been a long time since they've been the very best in the world at sevens. That is a code that is wide open. And everybody knew that you guys were going to be powerhouses because you've got such athletes, you know, like it suits you. It really does suit your game, like with some of the speed and impact.
Thanks a lot. Go ahead, Mark. I appreciate it.
So let's, Brenton, how can people get a hold of you?
Before we do that, can I just make one more rugby comment?
Sure, go ahead.
Yes, please do.
To help your nation, to help your the development of your industry.
Yes.
One thing that I see rugby industries, and this goes, every industry can benefit from this. So medical industry people, listen out for this. Rugby associations, listen to this. Start listening to your fans. That's got to be the most important thing moving forward. There are things taking place in rugby that if you'd have asked fans 20, 30 years ago, we were discussing this around the pub. It's like the game's being run by people that don't even understand what the hardcore fans feel and want. You know, like New Zealand wants Pacific Island nations to be involved. But the New Zealand Rugby Union, still very protectionist. You know, the decisions that they make tend to be very much for the benefit of the elite of rugby instead of where they could really grow the game. You start. And I think that's, again, why your code is growing so heavily, because this is something your country does so well. You know, you really do put on a spectacle. You know, you love giving great experiences.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, it was so funny. Years ago, I was playing rugby with a guy from New Zealand. And he's like, you know what, mate? If you came over and, you know, you were wild and crazy before the game, everybody would hate you. But if you came and you played great, and then at the party afterwards, the drink up, you were wild and crazy, everybody would love you, you know, because the angry, the American, you know, the loud, obnoxious American, you know, we're known for spectacles. But if you meet us initially and we see that we are true and authentic, then, you know, that's something that I think New Zealanders really enjoy. So thank you very much, Brenton, for being with us on a Monday when it's actually Sunday over here in Florida.
Thank you so much,
well,
Brenton.
It's great. So, yeah, to get in contact with me,
yeah.
I have a very low level of acceptance on LinkedIn. So just reach out, say hi. If you've got software sales in the title, you might want to just mention that, because I seem to get 10 of those every day around the world of software companies trying to grab
to
connect with me. But if you want to connect about customer experience, to have a chat, if you want to understand your customers more or understand how voice of customer platforms can benefit your understanding of your customers, reach out. Would love to chat.
All right. Thank you so much, Brenton. Brenton Weber down under in New Zealand. Thank you so much. All right. Let's go ahead and move, Jesse, to our entrepreneur tip of the day.
The Cannabis Entrepreneur Tip of the Day.
The tip of the day is sponsored by Hemp Synergistics. From intelligent hemp-based consumer products and ingredients, Hemp Synergistics is a biotechnology company whose goal is to make a meaningful difference in the hemp industry. For more information, go to hempsynergistics.com. Back to you, Mike.
All right. Entrepreneurial tip of the day is focus on providing value. If you're in this business already, you already know this. Everybody goes, well, what does it cost? No matter what it is, if it's product, if it's consulting, if it's, you know, services, whatever that case may be. So I would encourage you to focus on providing value. And let me give you an example of that. So we've been lucky enough to be on 10 applications for licensure all around the United States in multiple states. And we've been successful for our clients and getting 90% of those, 9 out of 10, actually approved for licensure. Sometimes we come in and provide the actual application process. Sometimes we come in as an equity shareholder and come in and run the whole project. It just depends on the project and what the needs are. But one of the biggest things that I find a challenge is everybody wants to know what it costs up front, but they don't understand the value of it. So let me give you an example. If you're unfamiliar with doing licensure on the East Coast, primarily for licenses, typically there's a few licenses available and a lot of people who want to apply. For example, in the state of New Jersey, when they did dispensary applications, there were going to be 50 total applications will be approved, so 50 licenses. Each license would allow to have three different dispensary locations, so 150 total throughout the state. They had over almost 500 applicants for 50 slots. So out of that, you're looking at a situation where you have to be one of the best to be able to apply to win. And a lot of companies would come in to say, well, what is that going to cost me to do that? And it's not cheap. I mean, some of these applications, if you're going to bring a team in like ours or others, you could be paying between $250 and $500,000. And a lot of people say, well, that's, you know, I don't want to pay that type of money. And I say, well, then don't. But if you're going to try to do it very, very cheaply, then you're not going to get that value. You're going to be wasting your money. Perfect example was, there was a gentleman who applied for a grower processor license in Pennsylvania, and he did it all himself. And he said he spent $50,000, and he should have won, but he came in dead last. And you looked at his application, and it was horrible. He didn't have the right situation. He didn't have the right paperwork. He didn't have the right type of things that the state was looking for, so he didn't win. So he wasted $50,000. And so a lot of times we talk about value. We say, if you're going to spend the money, you might as well spend it to win rather than wasting your time and just throwing your money down the tube. Think about that as you create your business. What is your value play? You want to focus on what you provide and the value for that, and not specifically the cost. Because if people just focus on cost, you're never going to get past that hurdle, because they'll always be looking to where they're going to bring you down on price and not focus on value. So always try to focus on value. And that leads us to our Cannabis Champion of the Week.
The Cannabis Champion of the Week.
I love how Mike does the lip syncing to that. And a great singer who did that voiceover, by the way. Cannabis Champion of the Week, sponsored by the World CBD Awards. If you want to be part of the world's only objective product awards competition, the World CBD Awards Conference and Gala is for you. For more information, go to worldcbdawards.com. All right, Mike, take it away.
Okay, our Champion of the Week this week is Dr. Michelle Weiner. She's a pain care physician in the Spine and Wellness Centers of America, located near Miami, Florida. Dr. Weiner is known as South Florida's medical cannabis and CBD expert and is a licensed medical cannabis physician in the state of Florida. Dr. Weiner holds a bachelor's degree in nutritional sciences, master's of public health, and doctorate of osteopathic medicine and rehabilitative medicine. She is the chair of the Florida Medical Cannabis Advisory Committee. She is also on faculty at Florida International University, conducting research on cannabis as a substitute for opioids in chronic pain patients. We salute Dr. Weiner for pushing the science of cannabis forward, decreasing the stigma associated with this amazing plant, and risking her professional career so people who need access to cannabis can receive it. Dr. Weiner can be reached on LinkedIn at Michelle Weiner, D-O, M-P-H, Miami, Fort Lauderdale. So that's Michelle Weiner, D-O, M-P-H, Miami, Fort Lauderdale. So I want to thank everybody for tuning into this show. And that's the way it is in the world of cannabis today. The power of change is within us, and the world changes when we change. Thank you so much for watching. And always remember, we are all we need. Till next time. See ya.
Bye. See you later. Bye.